Well, it's December now. It wasn't December last time we talked, was it?
It was December 3rd. It was the 9th anniversary of making it 100 less.
Okay. It's still December. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It's just the beginning.
Feels like a very long month so far. Which December is weird 10th. Because last year, like we were talking, me and Jenny were talking last year about, in January, about how quickly December went. I love the Christmas season. I love all the stuff around Christmas. But last year, it was like blink of an eye. December was over. We didn't do any of the stuff that we wanted to do as a family, you know, like watching movies and going to see lights and all that stuff. So this year we were like, okay, we got to really take advantage of it. And now it feels like it's dragging on for the wrong reasons. It just, it's just been a long couple of
weeks. It's funny. I keep having this, and tell me if you guys feel the same. It's like, oh, well, Christmas is coming. I should really start making some leather stuff. Or I should start, you know, me and Rob have been ramping up the ice picks. Thanks, Rob, for pushing me. Rob constantly pushes me with the ice picks. I'm lazy about it. He's like, Christmas is coming, you know. If you don't get your order in by this X date, then you won't be able to ship it for Christmas. And I'm like, we got plenty of time. Christmas is at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I'm thinking to myself. I'm like, wait a minute. Christmas is like 10 days away.
Yeah.
I thought that yesterday. Oh, okay. I really do. And then Rachel's like, why don't you do these combination things with the leather and the ice pick? I'm like, it's 2 weeks away. There's no time for me to come up with a good idea, get it marketed, and make a bunch of stock. People just have to buy what's available.
I mean, that's the problem with like the whole marketing thing for an event, like Black Friday, Christmas sale, whatever. You got to start working on that like
in October.
2 months in advance to get all, you know, if you really want to have different, like an email chain that goes out every couple of days, like we've been doing that for Black Friday, Orange Friday, we call it, for several years now. So we basically have the structure of media and we just swap out the dates and swap out the graphics and, you know, but the structure is there. And we do that a couple of months in advance to have it ready. But otherwise, we would be scrambling last minute to be like, oh, it's too late, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
We got it. It's the 25th.
Yeah. And Christmas was last week and we didn't do anything about it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So having like a mind for marketing or somebody else to have a mind for marketing, yeah, it's pretty helpful.
Yeah.
It's definitely not me. I'll tell you that.
Yep.
Well, what's new with you guys? What are you about to?
Well, I have an easy week this week. I posted my video late, which is the leather video, which I made the joke. It's holding steadfast 10 of 10. That's some inside baseball talk, which means nobody's watching it, but that's to be expected. Anytime I do a leather video, there really should just be Instagram reels at this point. Maybe I got to talk to Weaver and be like, can we just do an Instagram reel deal? Because they're always quick and easy to do. And unless I come up with something interesting. Well, I did the leather seat a couple weeks ago. That was pretty fun. That was a little off base. Anyway, I did a simple leather clutch, which is a design I came up with a while ago, at least a year ago. And I never liked the closure. If you notice on, you ever see these little brass buttons and the leather pops over the button? You usually see it on like police belts and stuff. It's like a little button and then you have a buttonhole and like the resilience of the leather snaps back around it. It's always so hard to get the right size button, the right size hole and consistency with the thickness of the leather. And that always drove me crazy with these little clutches that I make. I see some of my friends have them and they're like, oh, it's been working fine, but I never liked it. And you can't snap it shut unless it's full because you go to push on it and the whole bag crunches. You can't get the button to snap around. Anyway, these are all the problems. It led me to just use this old-fashioned idea, which I stole off a bag years ago, which is just a little hasp and the leather whip. And the leather whip goes through the hasp. So I went forward and made – that was what the video was about, really. I also did something interesting. I was editing and editing and editing, and I edit sometimes and I fall asleep. I'm sitting at the computer and I'm editing and all of a sudden I realize I fell asleep, especially when I do my watch back. It's like 2 a.m. and I'm doing my watch back and I'm like, okay. And then all of a sudden I wake up and I'm like, wait, where was the last thing I saw? And then I got to like rewind it and watch it again. And then I usually do my watch back a couple times, make some changes in like, I'll pause it, go to the edit, make that change, watch the watch back and make the change. And then once I render the final, then I do the voiceover over that. So the voiceover is just one clean sweep over a rendered clip. And I got to the point, I was like, you know what? I used to do videos where I don't voiceover. I said, it'll be okay if I publish this with no voiceover. So departing from what feels like the thing I've only ever done, which is voiceovers for less couple of years. So I published the video with no voiceover.
Well, and, you know, before that, it was like, no, I've never done a voiceover. Why would I do a voiceover? And then exactly. You started doing it. And so it's
And so, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's holding steady at 10 of 10. That's good. At least it's not below that.
Yeah, for those that know,
it can't get any worse.
That's true. For those that think 10 out of 10 sounds like a really good thing, it's not. It's
that's
the opposite.
Yeah, one of
on
10.
YouTube, so, there's in
comparison,
for people that don't have like a YouTube, you know, channel, comes,
yeah.
On the homepage of the dashboard, it shows you this video is performing at this place of the last 10.
Yeah.
So 1 of 10 is the best of the last 10 videos. 10 of 10 is the worst of the last 10 videos.
My,
and
like,
that is at any given second, which means if you refresh the page, it could change.
It usually
so sometimes you're like, sweet, 5 out of 10. And then you refresh and you're like, oh, 8 out of 10. That's weird.
Anyway, yeah. That's what happened with my Kitchen Island video. It was holding steady at 2 of 10. Then it dropped down to like 4 of 10. But I'm happy with that. Anything above the middle of the page is okay these days. But we were just talking and you know, a lot of people are getting hurt with the algorithm and low view count, but there's an affiliate link on that leather page. And like I said, even though it won't get a lot of views, that affiliate link keeps getting hit. So anybody wants to start leather work, it's my little pitch to save me, get me a mortgage payment next month. So thank you, everybody. That's it. My TED talk is over. No, it's not all that bad.
You have to do extra episodes of the podcast this month so you can make your mortgage.
No, everything's good. You know what happens? This is just general life in America. As a freelancer, you get to the point where you're totally broke, and then you do an assessment of receivables, and you're like, oh, if everybody pays their bills by next month, I'll be better than good. And then next month comes, and you're like paying bills off a credit card. You're like, any minute now, the boat's going to pop any minute. And then you get that check, and you're like, oh. And then you're like, oh, okay, this will get me through the next couple months.
Yeah,
and then you're like,
that took care of last month. So what about next month?
No, but I'm saying, but like, if you're fortunate enough, like that's just a little pop because you owed like three other pops. And you're like, okay. Like every once in a while, I'll say to Howard, Howard's my business partner. We have a mutual bank account for the business. That's like what we would buy property with or whatever. And I keep saying, I go, I might hit the account up for 10 grand just to cover some bills. And then I haven't had to do it. In all these years, I haven't had to do it. I've always been able to like stretch and then everything comes. And that's just me being super cautious. It's not like if I don't have the 10 grand, I'm broke. There's a threshold to me, which means zero.
Yeah.
But it's not zero. It's way not zero. But when it hits that threshold, I start panicking, even though it's not zero.
Yeah.
And so I there's a stretch. It's like a trampoline. Trampoline's at zero. But it still goes down way down before it hits the ground.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So anyway, anything above the surface of the trampoline is really where I'm worried about.
Oh, the like joys that. Of being self-employed.
I like that as a visual. That's of a bank account of the trampoline. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's like a membrane inside. This is even more abstract. It's like the membrane, and I swear to God, I've actually thought of this. It's like the membrane inside of a water tank for a house. You know, a water tank's got a big rubber thing. It's basically the same concept as a trampoline, but there's like water pressure on top of it. Never mind. Talk about that later. It's after show stuff. The plumbers are all laughing. All the plumbers are laughing. But no, besides that, everything's good going into. I've been selling some leather products out of the shop, which is good. But we talked before we started, and you know, Etsy's not a good thing for me because all my products are overpriced to the competition. There's lots of beautiful things on Etsy for under $100, which I could not compete with. So I just do my direct marketing on Instagram. And whenever I know, I told you guys this too before we started, whenever I know some people are coming over, I always like dress the room. Put everything on like something. How much is this? How much is this?
Just so. Why are there price tags on everything in your house? That's weird.
Yeah, you know, we thought about that when Taylor and I were Airbnb in the house 10 years ago, and she had a lot of her furniture around. She did have price tags on some of the furniture.
Oh, yeah.
She never sold anything out of the Airbnb thing, but what she did do is she got a spread in Style Magazine because one of the people from Style Magazine stayed here and reached back to her and was like, who makes this furniture? She's like, I do. She's like, would you do an article? And so,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not so far-fetched. But that's what I've been doing, just trying to brave the cold. It's been very, very cold. But that's it.
Cool.
That's it.
David, what have you been up to?
Well, earlier this week, we were supposed to install the slatted wall at the rental. Mm-hmm. Most of the pieces are kind of rough cut, and so the slatted wall part is made out of mahogany plywood, which is doubled up and then edge banded. I have all those pieces made. I have the frame kind of rough cut out, and I just need to go up there. But we had a snowstorm earlier this week.
Yeah.
And I mean, not like a huge snowstorm, but enough where like my brother is not going to drive an hour and a half. I'm not going to drive an hour through the snow. So that got delayed. And I think we're going up there tomorrow to do that installation, which means the video probably won't be out this weekend or probably be sometime next week. So that gave me a couple of days to do nothing. And then a last second sponsored video came through for a YouTube story, Instagram reel. And it was basically one of those, like, you're going to pay me how much to make a 60-second video? Yeah, let's do that.
Maybe we can do this all the time. You want to do this all the time?
Right.
I've had this.
So I spent a couple of days working on a short. And when I say a couple of days, like it's a good short. It definitely wouldn't take 2 days, but it took me 2 days because I'm like drawing things out. I'm planning. I'm like, well, if it's only going to be 60 seconds, let's make it look really cool and write a good script. And so I did all that. And so that'll be out, I think, later this week. So that is what I'm working on. Dang snow.
Yeah. It messed my video up as well, actually. And I didn't even have as much as you. We just had enough to, well, we had a little bit of snow and then it was just stayed cold. So it didn't go anywhere, which is unusual for us. Usually it's like, oh, look, we got snow. And then 12 hours later, it's like, oh, everything's just wet and gross and, you know, but last week,
snowing right now for me,
it was cold enough that it just stayed around. And we had, so the roof that I was in the middle of working on, I had like the standing seam panels down and I was ready to start working on the trim to go around the outside, which I talked about last week. It had like half inch of ice on it and then snow on top of that. And so you know, it was cold, but I'm like, it's done. So I'm going to go out and just scrape it off. And I'm going to like make that part of the video. And I scraped it off and then it was just wet. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to climb on the roof when it's just wet and it's not going to dry because the sun's not out and because it's like 29 degrees. So, so I basically just ran out of, I didn't have a way to work on the, you know, the roof safely. Jimmy, you said be safe, and I got off last week, and that was in my head when I got up there, and I'm like, put my foot on the roof when it was still wet, and I'm like,
no,
there is no traction at all. Not going to happen. So I had to pivot kind of last minute because that was supposed to be the video that comes out when people are listening to this. It comes out tomorrow, and I was already behind on it, and after that, I was like, nope, it's just we got to come up with something else. So I had been doing a bunch of stuff with my fish tanks. I mean, I've talked to you all about my fish tanks that I have. It's a hobby. It's like the thing that I don't really make videos about because there's no reason to. It's just a, you know, a thing that I enjoy. And so I had been working on setting up a new tank. And did I tell you all about making the new top for the fish tank?
You talked a little bit about it. I saw you showed it on a reel too.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I had to do an adjustment on that. And so that kind of spurred, well, like, what if I spent more time thinking about how a 3D printer, this time of year, some people are looking for reasons to get 3D printers, right? So I'm like, what if I came up with several reasons why having a printer makes your hobbies easier? And so I spent time, like, I usually don't. Usually it's like, hey, I want to make a video about making this pencil. Cool, let's go. And then start making the pencil. This one was like, let me think about why it would be worthwhile for this situation to be. And so it was different.
Careful.
To me.
You got to be careful ahead. Because you spend all that time working on this video and you're like, I'm going to make it so good. And then, you know, it's a very good chance that video is going to do very well. But if it doesn't do well, then it hurts even more.
Yeah. No, at this point, I don't expect any video to do well. I mean, that sounds negative. I don't mean that to be negative. I don't hold that expectation like this is the one. This is, you know, because the ones that I've felt that way about in the past, they just don't hit. Or the ones that I think are kind of pointless, they really hit. So, yeah. But anyway, I spent time thinking through coming up with like the idea, but I ended up modeling like, I don't know, 5 or 6 different things from scratch over the course of a couple of days. And I had printers running all the whole time, you know, overnight and everything to get these different things printed. And so it's just about, you know, if you want to make the most of your hobby time as an adult, hobbies like take lowest priority, you know, after everything else usually. So if you want to make the most of that time, like having a 3D printer can actually make it a lot better to have hobbies, you know, like actually help you enjoy your hobbies more. So that's the idea of it. And I don't know, I haven't seen the video yet because we're behind. And so it's being edited right now. So I don't know how it turned out, but it was fun to do. And it was easier in that, you know, it was, I sat at the computer, I thought, I designed, and then I hit print. And then I got to sit at the computer and think and design. You know, it is very different than like, oh, I got to go get some plywood and haul the plywood and, you know, or get on the roof and cut the metal. And you know, it's just a different kind of effort that goes into a video like that, which I don't think I could get away with all the time, but it was pretty nice. Anyway, so that's kind of what I've been doing is getting to work on my fish tanks and 3D print stuff. So it's been a good couple of days. It's been
Bob, what's nice the most exotic there. Animal you have in the fish tank?
Well, I don't really have exotic animals because they're freshwater tanks. Mm-hmm. So I've only had one saltwater tank in my whole life, and it was way too much work and too fragile, you know, just. So I prefer freshwater planted aquariums. So it's like an underwater garden. Mm-hmm. Or jungle is probably a better way to say it. It's just like wild plants, stuff coming in and out of them. And, you know, that's what I like. So it's all like fish you can just get anywhere. Nothing special. Mm-hmm. Just pretty things.
No octopus.
Look cool. No octopus. That would be saltwater. Mm-hmm. I do have shrimp. So one of the tanks is the new one that I set up is for little tiny cherry shrimp. And they're bright red. And that you can get them in all different colors, but I got bright red. And it's really fascinating to watch them. It's like watching an ant colony, kind of. Mm. You know, it's just there's movement all over the whole place, and there's little tiny things, and they have their own life and their jobs, and they're doing their thing. And, you know, it's just kind of every direction. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I saw Josh last night at Target. We ran into each other, and somehow he came across a fish tank, like a shrimp tank video or something a couple weeks ago, and it struck a chord. And he knows, he's seen my tanks a bunch of times, but for some reason, whatever he saw struck an interest in his mind. And then, so I saw him last night and he was like, yeah, I have a shrimp tank now, and it's set up and I'm doing this and I'm figuring this out. And that was pretty cool.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that's what I've been up to. But today I have to, well, not today, it's raining today, so it's going to be slick. Tomorrow, I have to get back on the roof. The big 20-foot roof panels that I ordered showed up a couple days ago. So theoretically, I have everything I need to be able to finish the roof other than time. So this week, I'm going to start digging into that. But today, because it's raining and because I finished one thing and I can't start the next thing, I think I'm going to go out to the farm and just like put on some headphones and listen, no, not listen to the rain because I have headphones on, but just like listen to the rain and work on the bodywork on the Carmagia and just put an afternoon at it with no camera and no goal other than progress, you know, because I've been thinking a lot about that. My recommendation today is a new video by Ronald Finger. You guys know Ronald Finger?
I think it sounds familiar.
I've talked about him before. He had a whole series of redoing a Fiero, an old Fiero. And it took him like several years to do. And since then, he has a 280Z, 240Z, one of the two. And so he's been working on that. And but he doesn't put videos out very often. I mean, it's like 6 months, a year. Like it takes a long time. But they're really funny. And he does a good job of explaining car stuff as someone who is learning car stuff, it seems like. I don't really know him or anything, but it seems like he's learning as he goes, but he has a really clever way of explaining things and showing his process of trying to get stuff working. Anyway, it's a really good video. It's like 30 minutes long. But watching him work on the 240 or 280, which is a car that I want to get eventually, I was just like, man, if he can put all of that work that he's doing in this video into that car, I can go out and at least put an afternoon into trying to get the Ghia moved ahead. You know, like just mm-hmm. something. There's like, I cannot avoid it forever. You got to get out there and just make some progress. And like, yeah. forget video, forget all that. It's got to move ahead. So I'm going to try to take advantage of today. And hopefully, I usually take the last couple of weeks of the year off and try not to, you know, be on a schedule and try not to like make any content or anything. But during those last couple of weeks, I think I'm going to also try to take at least two or three afternoons and go out there with that same focus of just like, just get one thing done. You know, the bodywork needs to be over with so I can move on to paint. I can move on to the front end, the back end, all of that work. I was also thinking about, in regard to that, I was walking around my shop and I was looking at the metalworking tools at home. And that whole area in my shop is always been a mess. It's always been kind of an afterthought. It's not something I use a whole lot, so it stays kind of messy and not organized and all that. And I was looking at it, wondering if I were to organize that well enough, is that garage portion, it's like a tiny garage area, is that big enough that if I had a rolling chassis for the Karma Ghia, could I pull it in there and work on it? Because I think one of the big problems with working on that car
is it still on the rotisserie?
No. It's in two pieces at the farm. Right. But the fact is it's at the farm, which is not
far.
Oh,
you're talking about
here.
Bringing it in right where you are now.
Yeah. Like if I had it here,
yeah.
you know, would I more likely walk down and put in 20 minutes of work on it rather than driving 15 minutes, 20 minutes of work and then driving home 15 minutes.
I could tell you from my experience, literally having a truck outside the shop and inside the shop makes a tremendous amount of difference versus literally being at another location and then at the house. You know, like when the Cadillac was in the backyard, me and Rob were like dabbling on it, hardly doing anything. But when we got it inside, that's when it was like, I'm going to go work on the Cadillac for a couple hours. I'm going to go outside. And because it's like being inside a hot tub because you're inside an air conditioner. And then also you're not putting tools down on gravel. You know, so that was my hurdle, but your hurdle is driving somewhere else. 100%. If it was there, you'd spend so much more time on it.
Yeah.
Provided you had the space to put it there.
Yeah. And I mean, I think probably the type of work that I've done so far, like all of the body work and the sanding and all that stuff, is definitely easier out there where I can open a big door, put on a fan, you know, than doing it in the basement of my house for sure. But I'm going to get to a point.
Electronics.
Yeah. Pretty soon, like doing interior work. And doing, running wiring and stuff like that. I feel like doing that in my air-conditioned basement would be a lot more comfortable. So I'm starting to think about that. Like maybe the next goal should actually be making it trailerable and getting it here.
Yeah.
And that's still a long-term goal. I mean, there's still a lot before I can even get it on a trailer, get it back to one piece. But if that's my next goal, then getting it here, then I can start to figure out how to put the time into all those other things to actually make it run. But anyway, if you haven't seen his video or any of his videos, you should definitely go check it out because he's a funny guy and has a really good way of just like making weird stuff interesting. So this 280Z that he's working on, he was trying to figure out how to make the engine more like he wanted to get more horsepower out of it without doing any permanent modifications to it. And so he goes through this process of like just an insane amount of work to replace. Like it has electronic fuel injection on it, but he replaces basically the entire system with modern components, but they're all swappable. So you could go back to the original thing if you wanted. And like he ends up modeling and 3D printing and then having other people machine these parts, these aluminum parts to make it all. It's just, it's wild. And he gets a computer and he hooks the whole thing up to the computer and then does dyno tests and he ends up with an extra 10% of horsepower increase or something like that after all this work. So I'm not sure that it was worth it. I mean, that is quite a bit when it comes to horsepower, but
sounds like a lot, actually.
But, you know, like it didn't become a supercar or anything, but the amount of work that he put into it is pretty wild. Anyway, I'll link it. That's my pick for today. You should check it out. But we were talking before we started recording about digital tools and how much they have opened up, I think, for us.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. I know, Jimmy, you have stuff to say about that. I wanted to say real quick that I've been thinking about, for a long time, about making another online course, like a really inexpensive one for people who have no 3D printing experience. And there's tons of free get started in 3D printing things out there. I know that, so don't email me. But I've been thinking about making it for, because people ask me about it. You know, people ask if they're interested in Fusion, but they don't have a printer, they don't know where to start. And so just like a primer, like explaining printing and the process and troubleshooting and all that type of stuff. So in that thinking, I was like, well, how do I make a course like that for people who don't have a printer yet or have bought one and they don't know what to do with it? How do I figure out the most ubiquitous generic printer structure language so that they know what I'm talking about, right? So I started looking up like inexpensive 3D printers this year, things that are popular right now, that are new right now, that are inexpensive. And by inexpensive, I'm saying like anything like more than $200. Anything under $200 to me is probably a toy. It's not really a printer, or you're going to have to fiddle with it so much that it's not going to be effective. So I started looking at this and looking at the printers that are available right now for like $300 to $600 is like a huge leap forward from 5 years ago, what was available for that price range. The quality that you get out of the machine, the capability of the machine, the software that goes with it, just it's night and day, way more usable. And so to this conversation, 3D printing has become, the bar for accessibility, both in price and functionality, has dropped, just continuing to drop as the functionality and stuff goes up. And so I think, you know, from a useful tool standpoint, a 3D printer is now at a point where you can buy one and it can immediately become a useful tool. Whereas even 5 years ago, you had to put some serious money into it for that to be the case, or you had to buy one that you were going to have to basically build or tweak or whatever to get it to baseline do what you wanted it to do. So for me, over the last few years, the 3D, CNC and laser, I think, are doing the same thing, but the 3D printer, that change is just gigantic. And it's been mm-hmm. the most impactful on me personally, I think.
Yeah. It seems like the big goal with 3D printing is always seems to be user accessibility user friendly, where you can open the box, stick the filament in, and get started. And obviously, the first couple of things, you find something on Thingiverse, something interesting, but then you get to the point where you might want to design something. And that's where I think, for me personally, that's where it drops, because I'm like, I would like to design something, but I don't want to learn another language, or at least I'm intimidated to learn another language, because then all of a sudden you open up Fusion and you're like, all I wanted to do is 3D print a bottle cap with my own accessory attachment, and all of a sudden I'm spending 6 hours at Fusion going, how do I do this?
Two things. All right. So the first thing is, I used to have the Bamboo Lab A1, and I think it's $300. Mm-hmm. That was and I'm sure there's other companies that make something comparable, but that was one of the best $300 ever spent, because the quality was so good. I've since upgraded to something bigger. I think I sold that to Brian Prusa. The Bamboo Lab software is fairly easy to use, although it's getting more complicated as they're getting more printers and you can get colors and stuff, but multiple colors. But Jimmy, since mm-hmm. you know Illustrator so well, mm-hmm. you could draw up your bottle cap, just a 2D mm-hmm. image of your bottle cap, bring that into Fusion, and then all you got to do is extrude some of those shapes, and then
it's
you're
true.
Off to the
races. I know, it's funny, when I haven't touched Fusion in a couple of years, I just kind of fell off, but it was true that I did have that breakthrough where I was able to make vectors in Illustrator, bring them in, and then use them as my extrusion paths. And that did help tremendously. So it's interesting that you say that. I'm learning this other program that I might get paid to learn it. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. I'm in a conversation with I wish I could remember the name. I'm looking for my iPad because it's an iPad program you use with the pen. So
Onshape.
Say it again.
Onshape.
That sounds Shaper. Maybe. They both sound familiar.
Is it 3D modeling?
Yeah, 3D modeling with the pen.
Yeah, it's probably Onshape, but who knows?
Yeah, and they're from Europe. They reached out to me from Europe.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, we don't have a deal, but they sent me the program just to get familiar with it, and I'm just playing with it. And so that would be a means to 3D printing. But what I tend to do is, when it comes to 3D printing, I tend to go to Thingiverse and find something, and then find something that might, like, for instance, I printed this pill cap, this pill bottle for just to hold screws, and I actually have it in my car. I found this cool thing. It almost looks like a Pelican case bottle, pill bottle with the ridges and stuff. So I printed a few of those. I keep one in my car for quarters because there's all these little townships up here that still have quartered meters. So you pull into town to go into like a fabric shop and you got to put a quarter in the meter. Otherwise you get an $8 ticket parking on like some minuscule little town. Occasionally I do need a very specific thing, and that's where the holdup is for me.
Yeah.
Is that, hold that specific.
I mean, it's, you know, no matter what software, it's not about Fusion, but no matter what software you are interested in, there's definitely going to be that learning curve. And a lot of people just don't have the time to put in to, you know, get over that curve. But I will say, as somebody who didn't model a whole lot for a long time, and then I put in the effort to learn Fusion, and now I print a lot more, for me, it's almost a joy to sit down and model something, because I don't know everything about the software or anything, but I know enough and I'm comfortable enough with what's there, like you are with Illustrator, that if I have an idea, I'm not worried about whether I can create it or not. And that feels really awesome, you know, because there's other things, like if you were talking about like physical sculpture or something, I could have an idea, but who knows how it's going to turn out. Like, I don't know if I could actually pull it off or not. When it comes to 3D modeling, I know that I can get at least 90% toward the idea. And then there's going to be some refinement and some like trial and error and stuff like that. But that feels great to be able to have a direct path from your mind to like the reality of it's at least digital. And I do hope that people, no matter what software it is, again, it's not about Fusion, whatever that holdup is for people to be able to get their ideas into something that they could actually do something with, I hope people are willing to put in that little bit of extra work to learn the thing. Same thing goes with programming, same thing goes with music. I mean, it's, you know, it's not about 3D modeling necessarily. It's just software often ends up being a conduit from your idea to reality, and there's just work to learn that software, but it's worthwhile for me. Anyway.
I'll tell you a funny story. Everyone says I'm such an Illustrator expert. It's only because I've been using it since the program came out, but there's still, it's such a deep program. You know, Dave, you use it, I use it. You use it so differently than I do. I'm sure there's so many tricks and things that you do. Like you told me to use Shape Creator, whatever that's called. I use it all the time. Prior to that, I was just fumbling my way through trying to make shapes. But this weekend, my friend Dave, who I haven't seen in a long time, came down and he spent last weekend with me and he wanted to CNC a couple of things. He doesn't know experience using digital tools, but he does know 3D software because that's his expertise, 3D animation, but not CAM. So he can't go from, he just knows how to do those. He has a little bit of experience exporting vectors. So he exported vectors for this image he wanted me to CNC, and he gave me this is an interesting thing. So he gave me the file and I opened it up in Illustrator and all the vector lines were, it was a word, it was a logo, and all the vector lines were bright blue, like almost aqua blue, kind of like, like aqua blue. I'm like, that's interesting. Why would all these vector lines are usually black? I couldn't color them. I couldn't do anything. I was like, all right, well, then I opened it up in Lightburn because we did a couple of laser cuts. Opened in Lightburn, no problem. I was able to, they immediately, they were vectors. I was able to adjust it in Lightburn. I didn't spend too much time in Illustrator with it. Then we were going to CNC it, so I opened it up in Vectrex. And it just kept saying, we don't know what this is. I'm like, it's an Illustrator file. I'm like, you know what? We have to go back to Illustrator to figure this out. So we came back to the house, opened it up in Illustrator. And I already had it open, but all I did was just look at it and went right to Lightburn. So now I'm in Illustrator. Everything's aqua blue. I can't size it. I can't do anything to it. I'm like, how did you make this? He goes, I don't know. I'm fumbled my way through it because I don't even know how I did it.
I think I know what the issue is, but I'll
And it was driving me insane. And we couldn't figure out how to size it, couldn't color it. I'm like, why? You can't do anything with this. And every time you hover it over, it turned bright blue. I'm like, okay, I can't size it. And when you select it, there's not a bounding box around everything. There's just a bounding box in the middle of the logo that doesn't seem to touch any edge. So I didn't know what to do. I said, I opened up ChatGPT. I said, ChatGPT, this is what the problem is. I described it. And he was annoyed because he's older. He's like, I can't stand when people use ChatGPT. I'm like, hey, it's a launching point. So I said, I described what was going on. And it says, oh, well, it sounds like the issue you're having is that your vectors have been turned into guides. And they're no longer vectors, but they're now guides. Now, if you use Illustrator, you could make a guide, which means it turns into basically like graph paper. So this whole logo, somehow he fumbled and made it into guides, which was, that was the solution. So you go up and it says release guides. And now what were vectors go back to what were guides now become vectors again. Everyone's like, they're already tuning into other podcasts right now.
And then I click this one button and then.
And so that was the thing. He had no idea how he got there. So he fumbled and turned this logo into a guide. In Illustrator, when something is a guide, it basically becomes graph paper on the screen so you could draw over it. Everything you draw over it won't interact with it. You can't do anything to it. You can only move
it
around.
But that did show up in the output, in the output of the file?
It showed up in Lightburn as vectors.
That's weird.
In Illustrator, I couldn't do anything with it. That's why I finally realized after asking ChatGPT a couple of questions, it took a few rounds and then they're like, oh, it sounds like what you have is guides and not vectors.
Were you bringing an AI file into Lightburn?
Yep. And it opened up as vector. But with all the clues, we started to realize that his file was, I don't want to say corrupt because it was just not the right format, is because it wouldn't open up in Vectrex. Because Vectrex was, you could put dump anything into Vectrex, it usually will open up. But it just said, can't recognize this file. I'm like, what are they talking about? It's an Illustrator file. But the only thing in the file were guidelines. There was no vectors. But the vectors were ba-ba-ba-ba. I was like, all right, everyone's tuning over to Wood Talk right now.
What's up, Wood Talk?
So that's anyway, funny. So that was you think you know everything, and then you need ChatGPT to guide you through the darkness. But it does help. Somebody reached out to me a couple of weeks ago and said, I can't figure out how to XYZ on this program. And I was like, I go, you know what? When I bump heads with the program, I said, just ask ChatGPT plainly as you would ask me. He wrote back an hour later. He's like, dude, because it solved exactly what the problem was. It's amazing. I was having a problem. I'm still having a problem with my fast cut CNC. The Z axis won't home, and I don't know why. So I asked Chat. I was asking ChatGPT at 11 o'clock last night, what's wrong with my fast cut CNC? And it gave me a bunch of things, but it didn't solve the problem. So I wrote to the support line, and I'll get an answer today. It's not urgent. I'm not in the middle of cutting anything. Every once in a while. What?
I was going to say, just wait until you can allow AI to take control over your screen and just fix the issues for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
not too far off.
Yeah. So I'm not in the middle of anything urgent. Every once in a while, I'll go to the plasma CNC and just make sure everything's working because I leave the machines on all the time. So I'll go to it, jog it, home it, just make sure everything. And I wasn't able to home it the other day, just out of nowhere, not for any cut. So there's no urgency. So I've emailed the helpline. But if I do have a pending problem and a deadline, I'll call the helpline and then they come in and they go, give us your number. And then they get right on your computer with you, which is pretty interesting. And fast cut. And they fumble through everything with you. You see all of a sudden your mouse starts moving without you. Mm-hmm. And they're in there. They're like, okay, we see here, we see here, we see here. Like, oh, this is why X, Y, Z. So that's one thing that I love about fast cut is they get right into your machine with you and they tell you exactly what's going on. And it takes seconds. Yeah. Exactly. He's like, that's instead of going move, he says, what's your number? And you're like, oh, it's 1166 further. And then all of a sudden, like, your mouse starts moving without you. You're like, oh, he's in my machine.
Like maybe I need to do screens. That for my Windows machine. I'm working on something and I needed to try something on Windows. And so I pulled out one of the laptops from the CNC machines that I haven't touched in how many ever years. And oh boy, I mean, I know people love Windows, so don't get mad at me if you love Windows, but
Windows sucks.
Oh boy, what a mess. What a mess.
It's horrible.
I mean, and it was like, you know, it's Windows 10, it's old, it's out of date, I guess, or whatever. But man, just like, I'm trying to find this application and there's an ad in the menu for some reason. Like, why is there an ad in between buttons
every
in the menu?
Every single time I open the computer, it's like this antivirus, this, and then they trick you with the continue or not now.
Yeah.
It's every single time. It's insane. And then it's like, sign into your Microsoft account. I'm like, I don't have a Microsoft account. I never had one. And then it's like, and then I get a bling on my phone. It's like, your password for your Microsoft account. I'm like, who set this account up? I never set up a Microsoft account, but I have one.
Because otherwise you could never get into the computer, which
I guess not.
Whatever. Yeah.
How about you open
Microsoft? Not complaining about Windows. That wasn't my point.
No, I got one more complaint.
My point is I opened a thing that I don't know how to use, and I should probably use AI to like guide me through just getting the thing tested that I need to test just so I can move ahead.
How about you, when you open up a Windows, anybody have this problem? You open up a Windows computer and it's just like, you type in your password. You're like, yeah, that's not the password.
Oh yeah, that happened this morning.
I'm like, it's my password. It's like, no, it's not.
Like, not anymore. What? It's not.
What are you talking? Then you got to go through this whole hack. Like, okay, if you could still hack it, even though you're telling me it's not the right password, and then you have to reset your password. What's the point of having it anyway? What if I was a total stranger?
Yeah.
I guess my MSNBC, whatever the hell the name. So you guys got approached by MSN. To license your videos?
Yeah. Yes.
Are you guys getting the like $8 royalty checks?
It's a little bit more, but it's very small.
My
first month was great, and then after that it just died.
My last one was $19. And I feel bad. Matthias Wendell wrote to me and he's like, what about this MSN thing? Do you think it's anything? I go, I just signed on. I go, I haven't seen my first royalty check. I was like, but you know, I figured why not? It's not gonna hurt anything. And then my first royalty showed up. It was like $8. So I was like, oops. It's just passive. You're not doing it. You're not working for it. They're doing it all. But it is strange when sometimes you Google yourself just to see where you're showing up. And it's like, Jimmy makes a sword. And I'm like, what is this article? And you click and it's like one of those MSNBC user interfaces where it's like, shows some video I made 10 years ago. It's got 17 views. I thought this was the biggest network in the whole world. Like. Yeah, no one's watching.
I don't know. So back to the digital tools. I said that 3D printing has gotten better, cheaper, I think, over the last few years. But you guys both use lasers and CNC more than I do. So how do you feel about those tools and their accessibility and their cost and all that stuff over the last
when you go
of
back,
years?
When you go back to the beginning of when we all started, and I was the odd man out that never had a laser, and then I eventually got one from... My first laser was from Dave. So Dave, thank you for getting me on that road. They gave me that full spectrum, the old one that looked like it was a component from the Apollo mission, 1969. That was like the styling of it.
The bed is this big, but the machine is this big.
Yeah, and it's all like stamped steel with rivets. It looked like a component that would have been like when you find like some abandoned office. Yeah. It's like some machine that like takes in teletype from Europe. But meanwhile. So anyway, so it was this old school laser cutter, which I got, and that started my relationship with Full Spectrum, and then they gave me some machines. But at this point, it's so incorporated into my day-to-day. Every time I think of something, I'm like, oh, I could just whip up a little logo or whip up a cut path. And I make all my boxes that I ship all get cut on the laser. So I think about the time when I knew nothing about it, and it seemed so inaccessible for me. So now I have a whole line of leather products, and every single thing I do on the leather products in the leather shop starts out on the laser cutter. And it gives me the freedom to think outside of the razor blade. If you're a leather person and you're doing just traditional leather work and you want to hand stitch everything, all you need is a razor blade and a cutting mat. But having a laser cutter, that's how I developed the tab and slot technique that I've been using to make all these bags out of one piece of leather with very limited, if no, not at all, sewing. And it's just really expands your thinking. And it's just been amazing when you think 10 years ago how was like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever get a laser. Well, like when you first started going to Maker Faire and you see the Epilogue laser guys, and it was like walking over, like they might as well have been offering flight lessons. You know, you go over and you like look at the thing and they like give you this little piece of wood that's like burnt with their logo and you're like, this is cool, but that'll never be me.
Yeah, and they're like, how much are these machines? They're like $25,000.
Yeah, like, but we cool. have a new offer today. We can give you one for $21,000. And you're like, no.
Yeah.
Thanks, sorry I bothered you. And you're like, scurry away.
Yeah.
It's funny, Epilogue still, as always, had all these weird shows. I don't know anybody that has an Epilogue laser, but meanwhile, they were the first ones that you see everywhere. Do you know anybody that has an Epilogue laser?
I don't, but I remember seeing one at a woodworking show, you know, like 10 years ago, and I was like, this would be the dream. And now exactly. I have too many lasers.
Now you're like, how do I get rid of all these lasers?
Sorry, it's, listeners.
It's so true, though. I have the big, giant 52-inch bed, full spectrum. And Taylor set her shop up in Hudson when we split. And I gave her that. And then Thunder Laser gave me a machine, same size, this giant machine, for one video. And then they didn't want to develop a relationship with me. That's fine. I could take it. I'm a grown man. And then I got a relationship with Aeon.
Not holding on
Laser.
To that at all.
So Aeon Laser sent me a giant machine. So now the full spectrum's in Taylor's shop. The Thunder Laser is literally sitting there with stuff piled all over it, but I'm going to give it to my buddy Keith, who just moved to the neighborhood. So Keith is going to get it as soon as the snow and I get my trailer back. My trailer's getting fixed. So as soon as I get my trailer back, we're going to bring it over to Keith's house. And then I have my Aeon laser. And now I'm like in talks with getting like a giant like metal flatbed laser to cut steel. So it's amazing how the technology has become much more prolific and it really expands your thinking. So if you're at that point where you're looking at a laser and you're like, it's like looking at maybe buying a small airplane, you know, as far as the insurmountability of it or the foreign nature, it's really, they really are amazing. Just start a YouTube channel, get a couple million followers, and then they start handing these things to you.
I think we can thank Glowforge for making lasers more accessible. So you remember, you know, 8-9 years ago, whenever that first Glowforge came out, the lasers used to be really big, like that Epilogue that you're talking about. And then the software used to look like it was made for Windows 3.1. And
yeah. Do you remember Glowforge... that laser software for full spectrum before they tried to copy Lightburn? Do you remember that software?
Yeah.
It was like looking at a medical chart. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
So, and they really changed the whole game. And now there's a bunch of laser companies that do this. And it's some people don't like the cloud-based software, but it's the cloud-based software that simplifies the whole thing. So it doesn't matter if you have a powerful computer or if you're Windows or Linux or Mac, because it's all browser based, and that just, it simplifies it. Plus you don't want to make browser based software insanely complicated. So you simplify it. It makes everything so much more approachable, and lasers are getting cheaper use. And you see lasers that, you know, some are the diode lasers that just kind of do engraving. If that's all you need, then you know, you can get a very small machine. If you want something that cuts, it has to have an enclosure and everything. And they're just, the price is coming down. They're still pretty expensive, but the prices have come way down. And it's just, they're really fun for me to use. I have a graphic design background. So I grew up in the 90s drawing on the computer. And now I can take shapes that I draw on a computer and cut them with a machine. Yeah. Are you kidding me? That's so much fun.
It's still magical.
It is. It's still magical. CNCs, on the other hand, I do think the software is getting better and the machines are getting more accessible, but there's still a huge, a learning curve for a CNC is far greater than a learning curve for a laser. Because there's so many things that can go wrong when you're
the cutting heads and the cutting bits and the feeds and speeds and plunges. And
I had a conversation with a well-known laser company a few weeks ago. So this well-known laser company came to my house to film a little video, like a behind the scenes. And I was like, man, I really like your software. I really like your machines. You guys should make a CNC because I feel like you would change the game. And so a couple weeks later, they're like, hey, did you have any ideas for what that CNC would look like? And I have a whole list of what I would love to see on a CNC. And I am never going to make this. I'm never going to license this. So I will talk about some of these things that I told this company. I hope they make it. But, you know, with the
CNC, you're getting consulting money if you're giving them your ideas. No, legitimately, like you should be getting consulting money for it.
I hear you. I did not get any consulting money.
They'll give you a machine.
They'll give me a machine. And I realize this. And I'm not sure. These ideas probably aren't super unique to me. But I would love to see, you know, one thing, you work at the CNC, you got to find what the tool height is. So you have a little sensor that you place under the bit. And the tool comes down and it does the thing. That's a whole step that you got to take before working with the CNC. It's like, what if there was an automatic tool height detection, like a LiDAR style thing? And then another big issue is like crash prevention. Like there should be cameras on the thing so it can detect if it's going to crash into a clamp or something goes wrong. Cable management. There's so many freaking cables with the CNC because you have
cable management is something nobody takes any attention to.
Yeah, because you have a spindle, which is separate from the machine. It's not part of the machine. Then you have power for the spindle, power for the CNC. What if it was more integrated so there were less freaking cables, just one cable to plug into the wall, another cable to plug into your computer or wirelessly.
And there's never a computer shelf for anything.
Yeah.
I see some CNCs on your knees while you're working.
Some CNCs, they have a built-in little touchscreen, and I could see that.
Yeah, Onefinity has that. I'm going to be playing with one of those soon.
And the software is just horrible. Like Vectrex is probably some of the best, but it's still, there's a huge learning curve. And I would love to see like the CNC should have some sort of like, I'm charging the audience for this consultation right now, Bob, so if that makes you feel any better.
No.
But I think one of the biggest things is speeds and feeds are really, really hard to figure out. Why can't the CNC understand, like, oh, I'm having trouble cutting through this. Let me slow down. Let me turn the spindle down. Let me slow the feed rate. This should be automatic.
That's a perfect use case for AI right there.
Exactly.
Something, an onboard AI that is learning from every single cut and making adjustments going forward. Yes. Continue. Sorry. Yeah.
And then clamping is a whole art form on the CNC. Like there's all these things. I hope this company builds my dream CNC because I want one, because it is quite the barrier, and it hasn't become as accessible as 3D printers and lasers yet, but it could be.
I do think, you know, Easel was a step in the right direction.
Yes.
Now, granted, there were, for Easel to exist, being like a browser-based, kind of straightforward, easy-to-use CNC software, it definitely had limitations. It also had limitations just because of when it was popular. I don't even know if it's still available. I have no idea. But when it came out, the machines that it could control were, you know, they had physical limitations that now the machines have passed those. They're stronger, they're bigger, they're faster, they can cut deeper, all that stuff. But the simplicity of Easel as a platform to be able to get something done, I think was a really good step in the right direction, which it probably informed how Glowforge did their thing for the laser. So there's probably a point where somebody's going to end up taking the idea of easy interface and doing another Easel style software for a more capable machine, I would expect. And that's not to throw any of the Invenable stuff under the bus, because I haven't kept up with their machines or their software, so I don't know what the current capabilities are. But I just know when it came out, it was pretty, you know, it made CNC reasonable for me to use at that point. So, but yeah, I'm with you. I would like to see that machine as well. And it's funny because I know that company you're talking about, and I was thinking about that a couple of weeks ago, about like, I wonder why they haven't done a CNC. It's got to be coming, right?
Well, I'm not speaking on behalf of them, but my thought is they use one piece of software for all of their machines. I happen to like this software much more than Lightburn. And because it's easier to use, and this particular company, you guys all know who I'm talking about, but this particular company, they used to have, you could use their software or you could use Lightburn, but now on the most recent machine, you can't use Lightburn. And that is because the limitations of Lightburn and all the different cameras that are in the laser. And, I won't get into that, but they use one piece of software for all the machines. So now if you put a CNC into the mix, that software now has to work on a Z-axis. Yeah. And it's a whole complicated thing. And that's my guess. But
yeah, most likely. And even Lightburn created, I haven't heard anything about it. I think it's out, but they created Lightburn for CNC, basically. And it was called Millmage.
Oh.
And I remember when I was 2 years ago, when I was at the Lightburn conference, they had just announced it. And they basically took Lightburn and then gutted they took the core of it. They gutted the two-dimensional aspect of it and had to rebuild a whole bunch of stuff for it to be in three dimensions. But it was trying to take that same interface, the same stuff that people already knew how to do, and adding like a third dimension to it and make it work with a bunch of different machines. I think that was their idea. I don't know. I didn't follow up with it, so I don't know where it went. But I think that was an attempt, you know, probably to make a more general piece of software that could control a bunch of different machines. And that's that danger, right? With any of these companies, the more complex the machine becomes with all the extra cameras and the autofocus and the feed and all that stuff, the more needs there are that have to be custom built into software, which makes the software less useful broadly across different machines. And so it's a trade-off. Like, do you want free software that works with just about anything? Do you want a machine that's super easy to use? That was the whole deal with Glowforge in the first place. And the big advantage of the Glowforge stuff was it just works, and I don't have to care about anything about the machine. I just know the size, the camera does all the work for me. I put the thing in there, I load the file and hit go, and it's done, you know? And from an efficiency, it's a drill kind of tool usage. That's the way to do it. I know some people love fiddling with, and I've said this a million times, but people love fiddling with 3D printers. They love adjusting and tweaking the settings and whatever. If I buy a drill and I have to figure out how to tweak the drill to make it drill a hole, there's no way I'm going to use that drill. And I look at a 3D printer and these other tools as tools. Like, it's not a project. For me, personally, it is for a lot of people. That's great. For me, it's a tool, and if it didn't work out of the box and do the thing that it's supposed to do, then it didn't do its job as a tool. For me, again. So I think, you know, all these companies are moving toward that, closer toward that as the stuff matures, which is amazing because the prices are also coming down and there's more competition across lasers, across 3D printers, which just makes everybody try to have to outdo each other, both in price and capability. And so, I mean, I think it's really good the way this stuff has matured in the last few years, but yeah, still got a way to go, probably. Any other thoughts on digital tools? How they've changed?
I think I would use my digital tools more if I could find a fun way to film it, where I don't necessarily make videos about how to do something. I'm trying to make videos about the journey of making something, and it's tough. And some people do a really, really good job at this, but it's tough to make an interesting video where I'm using all the digital tools. But if I was just getting started, I think I would gravitate more towards getting a 3D printer, a CNC, and a laser, which takes up a lot less space than a table saw, two band saws, a bunch of sanders, and a miter saw, and if you don't have a lot of space, but you have the budget for it, man, you can have a full woodworking shop with just digital tools, or a full manufacturing shop with just digital tools.
Yeah, and I mean, those tools are not going to do everything, but they, you know, a lot of projects, they can get you 75% there, and then it's like some sandpaper and glue. And
You still, I mean, a CNC is not going to replace everything, but because I still need, and you know, I still need to break down large boards. So I'm gonna want my bandsaw and
you just
and
need a bigger CNC.
I need a bigger CNC, yeah. can't resaw on a CNC. Can't
support
up on the side.
I'll tell you what, between me and Ryan shares my shop with me, we've gotten lazy to the point of where if you got to rip up a piece of plywood, you're like, just throw it on the CNC. It's going to be 100% accurate if you're going to like rip it. And if I need a plank that's, 1 foot by 6 feet, I throw a full sheet of plywood on the CNC machine instead of ripping it and cutting it apart. And we have there's all these like rando boards with like lots of good stock left on them, just leaning on the wall. So we go through the library of stock and be like, oh, here's a full 4x8 sheet that a few planks have been cut out of, but there's still plenty of room for this other thing. And it's become so much easier than breaking down a sheet of plywood, but you got to have a machine that could take a full sheet of plywood.
Yeah. I just had another thought. So I have this camera slider system where I can move the camera to one spot and I hit a button where it sets a keyframe. I move the camera to the second spot, hit a button, and it sets the keyframe. And then I can just have the camera loop between those two points for filming. What if I could take the CNC, just move the head to one point, hit a button, move the head to another point, hit a button, and then it just slices that piece of plywood in half?
Yeah.
No computer, well, no software.
That's a great idea.
Because feels reasonable, honestly.
I'll tell you what, I don't have this plasma table anymore. I gave it to Derek, so it's in Derek's possession. But the Lincoln Electric plasma table, to cut a piece of steel in half, you literally would select A and then move the head over to B and then hit cut. And it would go, it cut a, like that's to cut a plate completely in half.
Yeah.
So you cut, and so that is a great feature that would be great on any machine. Yeah,
and it seems reasonable to do either within the software or as like a probe. You know, I think you could probably do that somehow. Interesting.
Yeah, just like a rip cut.
Yeah, might have to think about that. Cool. You guys got any other thoughts
on this? I think we've exhausted this topic. Until next time, we talk about it again.
Next year, same time.
Well, we've run out of topics.
Let's just
be honest with ourselves.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Run out of ideas, too. That's why I keep hitting 10 of 10. It's my goal. 10 of 10.
That's right. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they keep coming back and supporting us talking about the same stuff over and over every year, which is pretty amazing. So thank you to all of you. Especially the top supporters, that's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Corey Ward, Matthias Garnow, Michael Menegin, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Lowman Design, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, the new Janky Workshop, Warren Works, and Works by Solo. But also, other people that I forgot to look up the list, but like people like Jeff Cooper. Jeff, thanks. Thanks to everybody over there that supports us. It does allow us to have a steady stream of, like, when we do the show, we know what it's going to do for us, right? Because of that support. And so even though we get 10 of 10, often, I was going to say on occasion, but often we get 10 of 10, then we know that we at least have the support of the Patreon for the podcast here, which is really amazing. So thank you all. Everybody gets the after show, and no matter what level you support, and you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then you'll have a link for the after show where you can put it in your podcast player and you can hear more of us talking about stuff. My recommendation, I already told you, is Ronald Finger's new video. Do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
I was going to recommend Woodworking is BS because two people that we know were on it. Remember that?
Is that episode out?
I don't know. Oh. I'm still trying to find it in my podcast player. I can't find it, but Woodworking is BS. You can say the whole word out.
The two people he's talking about are he and I.
Me and Bob went on there a couple weekends ago. We talked about failure.
We did, and it is not out yet, as far as I can tell.
Anyway, go to the podcast. It's a good one.
Yeah.
We'll be on there soon.
So mine is, it's a channel I've recommended before, but it just deserves so much more attention, and it's called Synodrome. I just absolutely love every single one of his videos.
I love Cinnabon.
Cinnabons are delicious.
There's just a good, there's good pacing. It's interesting to see somebody else's workflow that's completely different than mine, different style than mine, and just highly entertaining and somewhat educational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. I enjoy those as well. Cool. Well, I guess that's it for this week, unless you guys got anything else. Cool. Well, thanks for being here, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Love you, buddy. Love you. Say back.